Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome back to Unheard. On Friday, the UK Court of Appeal rejected the case of Shamima Begum to have her British citizenship reinstated. This is the 15-year-old schoolgirl, as she was then, who ran away in 2015 to join Islamic State, or ISIL. She married a jihadi and bore three children, none of whom survive. In 2019, the then Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, revoked her UK citizenship on the grounds that she was also technically Bangladeshi, so she wouldn't be rendered stateless, and that she was a danger to the nation. She's been fighting it ever since. So, is this judgment a victory for common sense? Or is it actually show justice that we should be ashamed of? Well, former Supreme Court Justice and friend of the show, Jonathan Sumption, one of the great legal minds of his generation, feels like the right person to ask. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hello.
What's your reaction? Do you think we should have allowed Shamima Begum to retain British citizenship, or do you support the decision?
Well, legally, nothing in the Court of Appeal's judgment surprised me at all. Their main argument was that because Shamima Begum had been trafficked for sexual purposes, she should not have been deprived of her citizenship. The problem about that is that the Home Secretary deprived her of citizenship because he took the view that she was a threat to national security. It's a power that he's got. And it seems pretty clear that you can be trafficked for sexual purposes and still be a threat to national security. We don't know why she was thought to be a threat to national security. The Home Secretary, and indeed to some extent the courts, have relied on confidential intelligence assessments, which have quite properly not been disclosed. So we have to take their word for it. Personally, I find it surprising. It seems to me that the follies of a 15-year-old school child must be redeemable. It also seems pretty clear that since she is probably the best-known person in the world in her particular position, she would be the last person to be used as a way of disrupting the British state. But, you know, these are not my well-informed comments. I do not know what was in the intelligence dossier. The real problem here seems to me not to be a problem for the courts at all. It's a problem about the law. The law says that the Home Secretary cannot deprive a person of citizenship if it would make them stateless. Now, statelessness is treated, perfectly correctly, as a purely legal concept. But realistically, it isn't. Shamima Begum could be deprived of her British citizenship because, in theory, she had Bangladeshi citizenship. There are lots of countries in the world that impose citizenship on people under their own law without their knowledge or consent, sometimes completely arbitrarily. And Shamima Begum was technically a Bangladeshi citizen until she was 21 years old because her parents were born in Bangladesh, and that's what the law of Bangladesh says. But her Bangladeshi citizenship was actually a legal fiction. She'd never been to Bangladesh. She wasn't born there. She had absolutely no connection with Bangladesh. And the Bangladeshi government has made it clear that they wouldn't allow her to enter the country. So frankly, her Bangladeshi citizenship was an empty legal husk. It meant absolutely nothing.
So you think she has been rendered effectively stateless today.
Well, she has. There's no doubt about that. Until she was 21, she was effectively stateless because her Bangladeshi citizenship meant nothing. Once she was 21, her Bangladeshi citizenship lapsed, and so she's now completely stateless, both in fact and in law. So what's really happened is that the Home Secretary has deprived her of the only citizenship that mattered in any realistic sense, because she was a citizen, had another citizenship, which frankly had no reality at all.
So let's just unpick a couple of those arguments. Had you been persuaded that she was a real and present danger to national security, would you, in that scenario, support her losing her citizenship?
Yes, provided that there was that this was a state of affairs that there was reason to think would continue.
Even if she would be rendered stateless in the process?
Yes. I don't see why the Home Secretary should accept the continued citizenship of somebody who is a threat to the security of the UK. I am sceptical about whether that was actually the case.
So really, that's the crucial question in your mind, is whether that, and we'll never see the evidence, so we're all speculating in a way.
Well, there's a bit more to it than that, because the Home Secretary can't make somebody stateless, however bad their threat to the UK. And the problem is that he has effectively made her stateless, not in law, but in practice, so that anybody who cares about the reality of the situation, as opposed to legal formulae, should be concerned about this.
So the whole business of whether or not she was trafficked, do you think that was just a bad defence and she should have hired you instead because they picked the wrong argument?
Well, people in a desperate position can't be too choosy about the arguments that they use. What was being argued was that the Home Secretary had a duty to investigate the question whether she had or hadn't been trafficked. And this was the peg on which was they were going to hang the idea that in order to investigate that properly and give effect to the law against trafficking, he had to bring her back to the UK. Of course, the Home Secretary was never going to do that because once she's in the UK, it would be pretty well impossible to deport her, citizen or no citizen. So that was the argument. It seems to me to be pretty feeble, but I'm the last person who is going to criticise those who have very little weaponry in their lockers for doing the best they can.
And just to finish on the sort of technical legal aspects, as I understand it, this whole case rested on a prior decision by the Supreme Court that the case could go ahead without her being there. And there was another controversy about that. Do you support that earlier?
Yes, I do, because the argument was that she couldn't effectively instruct her lawyers or bring her appeal if she wasn't physically present in the UK. I mean, that's just factually nonsense. Litigation, even complex litigation, even public law litigation, can be and very often is conducted at a distance. So essentially, this feels like a device to bring her back to the UK, given that it would then be pretty well impossible to remove her.
What's interesting to me is that actually on those big legal questions, you support the direction of travel. We could have tried her like this. It is theoretically possible not to give her citizenship, even if it rendered her effectively stateless. It all comes down to really more of an overall sense of the rights and wrongs of the case.
That is my position. I do not think that the decision of the Home Secretary can be faulted in law, for all the reasons that the Court of Appeal explained in their pretty comprehensive judgment this morning. What I do think, however, is that the law has given the Home Secretary the power to commit a gross injustice, and he has chosen to do that. Other Home Secretaries might not have done.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Do you think it's something to do with this sense that a citizenship should be a sort of sacred possession? That actually once you've been let in, as it were, or if you're born here, or if you have a British passport, it shouldn't be a reasonable measure to suddenly withdraw it. Is that where the injustice lies?
That's not where I start from. I mean, the fact is the law says you can withdraw it if it is, to use the statutory phrase, conducive to the public good to withdraw it. And I don't have any problem with the principle. I do think that it is such a drastic power that the Home Secretaries should always be exceptionally cautious before exercising it.
So if it's the public good argument, what about the argument that surely just as an example to other people who might be considering becoming traitors to their country, absconding, joining a murderous regime that wishes ill to our own country, this now makes it quite clear that it's not allowed. And if you do that, you won't be allowed back. Is that not a public good?
Yes, I think it is. And you've got to weigh up, however, different public goods. One public good is a basic sense of justice. I mean, because she committed an act of gross folly at the age of 15, she is now condemned to be unable to go anywhere in the world except in the Kurdish-run detention centre where she has been for the last few years. Now, that is a situation which seems likely to persist permanently. Now, I think some sense of proportion should be brought to this, even if one is interested in deterring others. And to my mind, condemning somebody to effective permanent exile in an unfriendly corner of northern Syria is a grossly disproportionate response to the act of somebody who was only 15 when she took this fateful decision.
I suspect what some people watching might think is that this is another overly observant to the rules kind of argument made by Western powers that seem unable to defend themselves from things that are most common sense people would think are bad, such as terrorists and such as people who are evidently traitors. And yet here we are finding ways to defend her, finding ways to let her back in. What would you say to those people who are like, come on, Lord Sumption, you know, this is now angels on the head of a pin. She went to the Islamic State. She witnessed murders. She took part in violence. She was part of an absolute enemy country. Why would we want her back?
Well, that's one point of view. It's not a point of view that I share because of her age at the time and because I believe that people who commit this sort of act at the age of 15 are redeemable. Now, I accept that I've not seen the intelligence material any more than you have or anyone else has, pardon, I am Secretary of the Courts. But you know, it seems to me that a basic observation about human nature suggests that it's very unlikely to be the case that this young woman is incapable of being redeemed.
Thought experiment. If it had gone the other way, she had had citizenship restored and she was now on a plane about to land in Gatwick, what would happen to her on return? Would you recommend that she was now prosecuted in British courts for some kind of crime, or would she then be writing memoirs that are published in the newsagents? What do you expect would happen?
She has committed serious criminal offences by joining ISIS, and she could be prosecuted for those, and I would have thought should be if she came back. I don't have a problem about that. And that's actually what most countries have done. Most countries have repatriated their misguided citizens, mostly young, who went off and joined ISIS before ISIS collapsed. And so, you know, it is, for all that you say about deterrence and treachery and all that, and, you know, I can concede the force of those points, there are other ways of dealing with this.
You're very well known for recently having come out against the European Court of Human Rights. It's a completely separate issue, but I think in people's minds it will be a sort of cousin of this question, in that it once again pits our sort of national self-interest against complex international legal frameworks, which, and there's a question of which we have a prior allegiance to. Is it rules about statelessness and rules about international law, or should we be a bit more rough and ready and just defend the national interest? On the ECHR question, you've taken the different course, and you seem to think that those courts are overly politicized and no longer represent the British interest, but you take a different view on this question.
There's no inconsistency, because the rule which empowers the Home Secretary to deprive her of her citizenship is a rule of English statute law, with the limitations that English statute law imposes. This isn't a position that I'm taking on account of any kind of international norm. It simply seems to me to be a basic principle of justice in the broader non-legal sense. Ministers often have powers to do unjust things, to do things that wiser ministers might not do. And I think a wiser minister than Javid would probably have taken a different line.
Another separate but possibly related question has happened in the last couple of days, which is the whole business of the Speaker of the House of Commons ripping up precedent, apparently because he was anxious about protesters and threats to MP security related to Israel-Gaza. Where do you stand on that?
I find it bizarre to suggest that the procedural rules about motion is going to take priority should have any impact at all on the safety of MPs. I believed that this speaker's predecessor, John Bercow, for all his vices, and there were plenty of those, actually did the country a considerable service by not allowing a government which did not have a majority in the House of Commons to determine exactly what the House of Commons should consider. That was the view that I expressed, and it's one that I still hold. I think that Speaker Hoyle's decision about the debate the day before yesterday comes into a different category entirely. There are circumstances, and minority governments is one of them, when it's right to modify the rules to an unusual situation. But what Speaker Hoyle did was to deprive the Scottish National Party of their right to bring forward and vote upon their own motion. Opposite, the government has most of the cards in House of Commons procedure. One of the few exceptions to that is that opposition parties are entitled to opposition days when they determine the agenda, they put forward the motion that they want to put forward. The Scottish National Party has fewer opposition days than the Labour Party because it's a smaller party, and it has effectively been deprived of those by a decision on the part of the Speaker which enabled the Labour Party to hijack their opposition day. I think that is a serious matter. And although there's all sorts of tactical shenanigans going on, the Scottish National Party was trying to set a trap to the Labour Party so as to encourage rebellions, which they hoped would reduce the impact, electoral impact of the Labour Party in Scotland. The Labour Party wanted to avoid the appearance of a schism, which in fact exists. The Conservative Party was very happy to see them all fighting each other, all to its own good. I am not in any of these camps, but I do care about the effectiveness of the House of Commons, and it seems to me that what Speaker Hoyle did undermined its effectiveness in quite a significant way.
Does it worry you also that this sense that, you know, there was a big protest over the road in Parliament Square, they were beaming from the river to the sea up the length of Big Ben? Apparently, certain Labour MPs had received threats to their safety. Does it worry you that there was that sense of intimidation that brought about that change to procedure?
Well, if indeed it did, I think that I don't know how real the threat is, and I don't know how real it is to suggest that the threat was increased by determining whether it was the SNP's motion critical of Israel or the Labour Party's motion slightly less critical of Israel, which took priority. I just think these are two unconnected facts. But the answer to your question, does it concern me that there should be threats, that there should be an atmosphere of violence? Yes, of course it does, and it should concern anybody. But I don't think it's got anything to do with the procedural decisions of the Speaker of the House of Commons.
Final question, Lord Sumption. A lot of people who've been watching this channel would have become big fans of yours during the COVID period. And you were so much of an outlier there, and you really stuck to your guns on the lockdowns were a mistake. Tracing your viewpoints through, we now reach where you've come down on the Shamima Begum case. It's, I guess, more of a...
Well, I think I'm an outlier on that too. I suspect that I am. But, you know, I don't do portfolio politics. I don't take the line that because I think something about issue X, I've got to think something about some unrelated issue Y. I try to look at each problem on its merits.
Well, I was going to accuse you of coherence, actually, because...
Well, that's welcome. I plead guilty to coherence.
The thread that unites them is a sort of respect for liberalism in the technical sense, that it was thrown out during the COVID era. And in the case of Shamima Begum, you don't go around just denying people passports on the whim of the Home Secretary. That doesn't feel proper. Is that? Do you think that's a coherent thread?
I think that's perfectly fair. I mean, I am a liberal, and that is a common feature in quite a lot of the views that I take on public affairs.
That means proper institutions, proper procedures, and following some rules.
Respect for conventions when those conventions are still relevant. Sometimes they have ceased to be relevant when one allows them to expire. But we're not in that area now.
And liberty being a big part of that.
Liberty is not an absolute value. It can be trumped. But it needs something really important to trump it.
Lord Sumption, thanks for giving us the benefit of your wisdom today.
Thank you.
Always good to hear from Jonathan Sumption, a real friend of the show and a independent thinker, just the kind of person we love here at Unheard. Whether you agree with him or not, let us know. And thanks for joining. This was Unheard.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.